Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Tejasvinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivatsadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Page 48. The devotees of the Lord, the nine processes of devotional service, executed by the devotees, the definition of devotional service, and the symptoms of uncontaminated devotional service and love of God. Devotional service to the Lord is obtained only by the mercy of the devotees. The author offers prayers to them, right? Because devotional service can only be obtained by the... So we've offered obeisances to the Supreme Lord, right? Who is the, you know, all in all, and then to the devotees by whom you can attain the Lord. I worship those devotees who are devoid of the desire for liberation, who are engaged in welfare activities for the whole world, who are empowered incarnations of the Supreme Lord, and who are attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. Lord Hari, the proprietor of all the universes, leaves his own abode and constantly resides with his devotees, being controlled by their love. I offer my humble obeisances to the feet of the moon-like devotees who have manifested from the ocean of piety. Those devotees take pleasure in Sri Krishna and constantly dissipate the darkness of ignorance and miseries of the material world. Right? So this is devotees in general. So according to their advancement, then these qualities will be more and more manifested. Right? Even the most neophyte devotee, his ultimate desire is not liberation, it's devotional service. Right? They're engaged in welfare activities, maybe they're not the inspiration behind it or who's, you know, giving the direction, but they're taking part in some way like that. Empowered incarnations is the chit potency that allows one to speak in Krishna consciousness. So even the new bhakta who is able to preach on the street and interest somebody, even though they've only been around a few weeks, that potency is coming from the Lord. Right? So that's there is the empowered. And attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. It doesn't mean that they're not attached to a whole lot of other things also, but the point is they're attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? Right? So, you know, then Hari leaves his own boat, constantly resides with the devotees. Now, Krishna sees them all as devotees, right? Every living entity. So therefore, he's living in the heart of everyone, right? But as they surrender to him and reciprocate with him based on affection, that's when it becomes interesting for the Lord. Before that, he's just waiting, right? Does that make sense? So otherwise, we might interpret this that means, oh, this is only those topmost devotees and everybody else is a schmutz, right? Like that. But that's not the case. Right? So now the author describes the characters of exalted devotees, right? That was the general characteristic, right? They apply to everyone. Now, the more exalted have this in greater amounts. Those who don't have it in lesser amounts. So when there's lesser amounts, then we discuss, you know, in the process about the, you know, the various anartas and other elements like that. And then the great devotees, then exalted, then we don't have to worry about that. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that, you know, now you're not and then you become. Because if you want to follow that one, you can. But then you know, actual devotee means prema. Below that, you're only a sadhak or aspirant. Like, if you want to apply that, you can. But know that it applies in this way. Right? But we see is that the acharyas and all the great personalities, they don't apply it that. They apply it that way so that you know where you're situated. But they don't apply that in dealing with others. Right? Everybody's devotee. Now it's just a matter of how much you can reciprocate, on what platform it would be appreciated. Right? Okay, exalted devotees. The devotees of the Lord constantly hear the holy names and qualities of Mukunda, happily sing the glories of his names and qualities, remember him in every sphere of life, always serve his lotus feet, worship his deity form, offer prayers to him, engage in his service, make friendship with him, and fully surrender to him. In this way, they offer all their activities for the pleasure of the Lord. The devotees are attached to wealth in the form of Krishna. They are attached to friends in the form of Krishna. They are attached to children in the form of Krishna. They give up everything to achieve Lord Krishna, and he is everything for them. Even though such devotees are surrounded by wealth, home, wives, children, friends, and associates, they offer everything to the service of the Lord. They claim nothing as their own, remaining always like beggars. So here you can see a balance. Even though they are first adverse to sense gratification, they engage the senses in seeing the forms of Sri Hari, hearing his qualities, relishing his remnants, and smelling and touching the flowers that have been offered to him. In this way, they appear to be materialists. Right? This is the difficulty, is that that's why only devotees can actually do these things. Right? The devotees, they can appreciate how to balance, right? But the materialists, they can't. It's all or nothing. Either you're into sense gratification, so you give it, you know, your everything and all, or it's completely useless and you have nothing to do with it. Right? And if you have nothing to do with it, you don't want any around. Right? And if you're into it, then anything other than that, anything gets in the way of that or changes the mood, you wouldn't want either. Does that make sense? So it all just goes upon our flavor of what it is that is important to us. Right? But when you change it that Krishna is the center, it takes on a whole different culture. You can be around facilities and it not bother you because it's all for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It means it goes on continuously within the material sphere, but because the culture is there, though the purity is not, then we don't identify it, like we were saying. Someone is working in a bank. They're surrounded by hundreds of thousands of millions of the currency, but they don't consider it's theirs. So that's why it works nicely. So it's not that they're not functioning in the environment of that, right? The cook is there cooking so many things at the restaurant, but it's not for him. You understand? All these different things that people are doing, they're doing it for someone else. But because ultimately their point is from that, it will give them the facility to enjoy for themselves. Then it's still counted as fruitive. Right? But the principle, underlying principle, is why anything works nicely culturally, socially, you know, in relationships, is because at least the form of it, the mechanics of it, is you're doing it for someone else. So you can be surrounded by things that are for oneself, but not be involved. Does that make sense? The man owns, you know, a casino in Vegas. But is he gambling? No, he'll never gamble. You have to be stupid to gamble. Right, that's how he makes his money. People are stupid. Right? There's an American saying, there's a sucker born every minute. Right? So he's smart enough to know that if he creates facilities for those who are attached to gambling, he'll make money. Right? They'll lose it, he'll get it. You understand? So it's not that it's for him. You understand? So they can work in any environment for the seeming benefit of someone else. Right? They're not taking advantage in the way everybody else is. Does that make sense? So in the same way, the devotee can be in household life or in administration or any of these other elements, I mean environments, and it's not for him. He's doing it for Krishna. But it doesn't mean he's not working with it. He's not involved with it. Right? Karma and gyan dictate that if it's, you know, it's karma, you're involved, and if it's gyan, you're not. Right? Because we're not looking at it as an occupation. If you look at an occupation, of course you're doing that, but you're not. You're not. You know, it's like that. What is it? That Murdoch, Star TV. When he was questioned once about the low quality of, entertainment on his channels, and how it may be bad for, you know, family and community values. His comment was, I don't let my kids watch it. You know, he says, it's business. There's people who want this. I'm providing it and making money. I'm seeing the opportunity. I'm making the money. It's business. But as far as culture goes, I wouldn't watch it. My kids won't watch it. You know, we wouldn't watch any of that schlock. Right? You know, it's just, it's useless. Right? So this point is, but devotional service, because we don't see it as occupation, right? Therefore, we put it into our own personal value. So therefore, then karma and gyan, if I'm not getting something from it, I'm not. Because the other, I'm getting something from this, I can leave something else, right? For a higher thing, I can leave a lower, right? If I gamble, I lose all the money. But if I don't gamble, I get all the money. So I'll go with that. Does that make sense? So the devotee, he's involved in all that, so it appears though he's a materialist, but he's not. Right? You know, you could say, you know, look at these disgusting bank employees surrounded by money, you know, just money is everywhere. All they're doing is touching money all day. What greedy, gross, you know, materialistic people. But no, they just count it and put it away. You know, you have money there, they give you your money. You don't have money there, they tell you you don't have money there. Yeah. Like that. And if you don't, you know, if you're still not convinced, then they have their friends. You know, there, they come and, you know, how you say?
Argue.
Yeah, convince. Yeah. Convince you. Does this make sense? It's important, yes.
What? And if you described about when those facilities are like, I would say, positive.
Gambling was positive? You want me to go further? Okay.
The devotee has, like, he's dealing with positive facilities, right? Money or dealing with material sphere in some opulence or anything like this. And another, I would say, aspect of material manifestation is negative when he has to deal with suffering or poverty or something. He has still the same consciousness of just being an instrument or sacrificing.
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, his point is that, you know, whatever you're doing, things go wrong. You know what I'm saying? This is the principle. See, means basically you could say in the Western mind, this is the secret. Is that by work, you get results. You don't work, you don't get results. Therefore, understanding this, be inspired to work, you'll be successful. You know, remain lazy or think you can't, you know, you can't do it, and you won't be successful. Right? But in the Vedic, that's just standard. Everybody works. There's no such thing as unemployment or, you know, people doing nothing. There's one or two walking around in the streets. You know? But that's it. You know what I'm saying? So this idea, the Vedas are always talking about, it's active activity, it's work. You know what I'm saying? So work means you're dealing with getting the present situation transformed into the situation you want. Because the situation generates your result. You know what I'm saying? Where does result come from? Yeah, activity in the situation. So the activity transforms it, or the situation transforms.
Actually, situation does transform.
Yeah, so the situation is what's transforming. That's why sambandha gyan, that's why you have to know what is the goal you can get. What is the process? Who are you in it? What are the elements? Right? When you know these four, then you can act. Right? But we just say it just kind of happens. It doesn't just happen. Depending on the quality of the work and applied to the particular situation, you get a result. Right? So, obstacle means it's not going, means the situation is adjusting or changing in ways that aren't necessarily favorable. Because the situation is bigger than us. If we were the supreme controller, then there would be no obstacle. But unfortunately, we're not the supreme controller. Right? Sorry to say, sad, you know, bad news, but I wouldn't want to be the first one to break this to you, you know, because it's said that, you know, one should not be the bearer of bad news, but, you know, hopefully you've heard it before in a class somewhere. So, not being the supreme controller, then it does, that means that there are other controllers and there's other things that are affecting the situation that you yourself are in, no matter how carefully you control it. Right? Everything's going great. You have your shipping company, you got your things, you got your dock, you know, you've worked it out. But you don't control the weather. You know what I'm saying? You don't control, you know, the politics between various countries and who, you know, says you can go through their water or not. You know what I'm saying? So the situation being bigger, then that is it. So the person who thinks the bigger situation, then he finds there's less obstacles, or at least he has a plan for dealing with them. You know what I'm saying? He may know something will come up, therefore he'll avoid it. Right? But that means then that is an obstacle. How to avoid an obstacle is an obstacle. Right? But just one is you're planning it so you don't feel as bad than one that just suddenly arises. And does that make sense? Right? So the point is, a sense work is the only way to get a result. Then that means whatever it takes to deal with the environment in the present situation to get that result, you have to deal with. Right? So the result is the good, but the endeavor is how you get it, but you have to take what's there and see that it transforms. Does that make sense? So that means that that your situation isn't the result you want already is an obstacle. Right? You know, you want, you know, a particular item from a particular shop, right? But you're sitting at your house. So there's already an obstacle. You're at your house and the shop is some distance away, right? So you have to overcome that obstacle, right? Then to get it, you have to have money. That means you had to have done some other work to generate the money. Then now you can do this work and spend your money. Does that make sense? So all there is removal of obstacles. That's all there is. Right? Does that make sense? That's all anyone's doing at any time. Right? Means the food is on the plate. Your mouth is, you know, half a meter away. That's an obstacle. Right? You know, therefore, babies have shortcuts. You know, you spread it on your stomach. Like that, you know. I mean, surface area, your mouth is small. The rest of the body's big. So, you know, there's certain direct, due to the innocence, you know, they're not encumbered by various, you know, how you say, social conceptions. Yes, and so they are able to more efficiently assimilate the foodstuffs, you know. Does that make sense? So the point is everything's an obstacle. There's no such thing as no obstacle. Just we don't look at it that way. So when an obstacle comes up, it means it was an obstacle we didn't think about. You know what I'm saying? But if someone who's intelligent then they're thinking about it. You know what I'm saying? The man who is, he has weather. He has political considerations. He has pirates. Right? He has competition. You know what I'm saying? So the more he considers all that, the less the obstacles won't be considered as obstacles. You know, you're considered an obstacle when your boat goes out and then it gets stopped somewhere because now, you know, one country's taken over another country and now this is their water and you don't have a treaty with them. You know, an arrangement with them. So you can't go through. So your boat sits there until you work out some arrangement. So then it's an obstacle. Right? Does that make sense? But if you know beforehand these countries are fighting, and if anything happens, so you take a different route, even though it may be a little longer, this, that, but better than losing your whole ship. Does that make sense? So you won't call it an obstacle. When you're thinking about it, then it'll be, but once you're starting your endeavor, you don't call it an obstacle. Does that make sense? So all it is the difference between the situation and what is the result you can gain from situation. That activity, you know, I mean that process between, that's the activity. Right? So that the one is not the other, that's already your obstacle. So the process of transforming it, that's going to include, you know, little things, you know. Does that make sense? You know, somebody didn't refill the Xerox machine with ink, you know, so that's a problem. So then you have to plan that. Therefore, you have an office manager. You know what I'm saying? That's what management means. But we have this idea, I will be happy without management. Does a billboard mention management? You know, the Mercedes car is being advertised there and it's, you know, only this much and this, all these different things like that. But does it talk about, you know, you're going to have to manage this, you're going to have to pay so much per year, and also that way, even though the price is this much, but since you're spreading it over 5 years, you're actually paying more than that, you know, and all these different things. Are they telling you all that? Is that all? No. Someone who's smart knows all that. Someone who's not then thinks it's just all perfect. And then when he finds he has the bills, he has this, he has that, then it's a problem. You understand? So if someone has sambandhik yan, then there's no, technically there's no problem, because the problem is already part of your sambandhik yan. Does that make sense? So people aren't intelligent, right? If people were intelligent, would they buy, you know, probably 3/4 of what they buy nowadays? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Go into the kid's closet. What's it full of? Junk that you bought him for his birthday or some other thing like that that he hasn't looked at in years. Right? Maximum, they'll play with the toys 2 weeks. And then that's it. Right? You know, clothes, shoes. I mean, there's tons of stuff. Why? Just because of social custom, other different things like this, just that you want it, you saw it on the advertisement, it looked great. You go into the kitchen, you go into the garage. Most people's houses, if you went through it, you could get rid of 2/3 to 3/4, maybe even, you know, 4/5 of all of their stuff. Because they don't use it. You know, so how much money was that? How much endeavor was that? But that's why people who know these things have money. And these people don't, because they spend it all on schlock. Does that make sense? Yes.
In that line, when we heard that when we align our desires to Krishna's desires, everything is perfect. But I understand that because for Krishna there is no obstacle, so what you want is bound to happen. And if an obstacle comes, that's Krishna.
Yeah, because he wants it. It's fun. We read before, much to our shock and amazement, that Krishna actually has fun when the obstacles come up. Because he's God. Everything goes perfect. So to create an environment where everything's not, you know, has seeming obstacles. For him, that's fun. We're trying to be God, so it's not fun, right? You know, because for God, that doesn't happen, right? But God likes it. So like you say, if we see everything in connection with God, the obstacles that come up are just part of the pastime, part of God's fun. So it may have, he gets many things done with one endeavor. So it can be for our purification. It could be for, to you know, somehow or another to catch the attention of others. You know, there may be so many things that are done, or something that we don't see, some bigger picture, so we go through all this trouble now, but then later it gives a much bigger result. You know, you lost this and that because you don't have, you get something bigger, but while before, if you hadn't lost it, you'd just be content with that smaller, you know, like this. So Krishna has some plan. Does that make sense? So it's not a problem. So, therefore, it appears, as we were saying, that the devotees may appear as materialists because they're still situated within the material environment with all the different things that everyone else has, surrounded by wealth, home, wives, children, friends, and associates. But they offer everything in the service of the Lord. Right? And so that will say, okay, everything's connected like that. But in the verse before, it says they are attached to wealth in the form of Krishna, they are attached to friends in the form of Krishna, they are attached to children in the form of Krishna. So that means they see it as Krishna. So all these indirect elements they see as Krishna. So it's all connected. So therefore the direct and the indirect, they all connect to Krishna. So they don't have any problem. You know what I'm saying? So they're taking their children and family to the temple. So everybody's engaged, so that's the direct. But at the same time, they see their attachment to their family is actually Krishna. It's not the family. You know what I'm saying? But because one is cooperating together, devotees work together to serve Krishna, therefore there's that friendship between the devotees. Right? So the souls have a relationship based on their service to Krishna. The bodies have their relationship based on the particular social custom. Does that make sense? So the devotee is able to deal with that. The devotees offer their sensual activities, body, mind, intelligence, and life to Lord Krishna without any personal desire. Thus they conquer the waves of the material senses, renouncing all kinds of pious and sinful activities. The devotees serve the lotus feet of Sri Mukunda, which shower an incessant flow of nectar. Right? So here is also pious, because we're very, for ourselves maybe, you know, practical and, you know, taking it in a balanced, timely way, giving up attachment to impious. You know, with others we demand, you know, piety immediately. If there's any sense of impiety, then they're not up to the standard. Right? But here it says the devotee doesn't have any pious and sinful. Neither have a value. Right? It's simply what pleases Krishna. That's what has a value. And we said before is serving Krishna is the most pious, so therefore, you know, it will be the natural environment. The culture of piety is the natural social culture of the devotee to situate himself and serve Krishna. But it's called devotional service because it's connected to Krishna. It's called piety because it's not connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Does that work? Yes? Okay.
Matt, all this presentation, it is for a person who are devotee, means their occupational duty is devotional service.
The occupational duty, not necessarily, because it said here, wealth, home, means they're looking at a Sanatan Dharma, so therefore their occupation and their ashram, they're seeing all in connection to Krishna. So in that way you could say devotional service is their occupation, but it doesn't mean that their definition as a full-time devotee is because they're living in the temple and they don't have these facilities. They're a full-time devotee, though they live in the community. Like that. That's the... Yes, because this is exalted devotees. He's defined. So he gave a general, you know, appreciation of the devotees. Now he's talking about the exalted. So everything's connected nicely. A devotee's natural qualities are nonviolence, truthfulness, honesty, purity, sobriety, self-control, forgiveness, peacefulness, satisfaction, patience, and many others. Right, so you have all these, you know, the 26 qualities. But in here, these main ones, nonviolence, truthfulness, purity, self-control, the fifth one, I have to look. Manu mentions that these five are the essence of the whole social system, the whole of Varnashram. Like that. Because nonviolence includes that you understand Krishna consciousness, you understand others that way, you deal with people in that way. Because if you don't, that's actually violence. Right? So it doesn't. Truthfulness means it's you understand, see everything in connection with Shastra, not according to your mental speculation. Right? So that would include. Now, purity means body, mind, and words are kept in consciousness is pure. Like that. And the fifth one, I think it's maybe satisfaction. Like that. So you see, he. Like that. And then those expand into 10. And then that expands into the 26 qualities of the devotee, or the 30 qualities within Daiva Varnashram. But they're all based on these fundamental qualities. Yes?
Could nonviolence refer only to the soul, you know, whatever, Kurukshetra, Arjuna, you cannot say it's nonviolence?
No, it's nonviolent because they're performing their duties. Violence means it's not according to duty. That we have to understand because, see, is that. Let us, because we take that, you know, someone's not satisfied on the material platform, meaning physically, emotionally, intellectually, and therefore that is violence, right? You physically harm somebody, that's violence, or emotionally harm, or intellectually, you know, like that, you know, take the quantum physicist, tie him up in the chair, and then go up to the blackboard, have his eyes open so he can't close, then go 2 + 2 = 7, like that, and then do that all day with different things, you know, stuff that he knows, you know, like that. You know, it'll be intellectual violence there, you know, he'll have a very seriously, you know, how you say, what would be the word, traumatized physicist here, you know. So there's no, so we would call these violence, you know, abuse like this. But Vedic, it's that if you're not connecting it to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, acting according to that, then it's violence. The person may like, you know what I'm saying? The child likes sitting there and, you know, just found something in the, you know, cupboard and eats the whole thing and it tasted great. But then after that, you know, they have a bad stomach and other things for so, you know, days like that. So the Vedic looks at that. So therefore that would be, not that they enjoyed it, so that they're enjoying themselves now, but then after that, then they're going to suffer from birth, death, old age and disease. That's violence. Right, so not understanding that we're not the body, we're the soul, you know, not that's violence. Not training people in that's violence. Allowing people to become attached to the engagement of their senses without training them in what's the real engagement of the senses, that's violence. You know what I'm saying? Being involved emotionally without understanding what is the nature. That's violence. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different perspective because you're looking at the long term, not the immediate. Right? And if you bring it in line, it'll include the immediate. Right? Who's on the battlefield? Right? At Kurukshetra, who is there on the battlefield getting killed? Bad guys. Okay? Okay? Do they have the big mustaches and, you know, with all the funny looks and all that? And
sometimes good guys.
No. Who is on the battlefield? Yes. Kshatriyas, right? There's no one else out there. So there is no mushrooms, right? There's nothing, you know. Does that make sense? So the point is, and do Kshatriyas like to fight? So do they have a problem with it being a battle? Do they know they might get killed? Okay, so there's not a problem. Right? So it's not technically violent, because they're having a great time. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so it's not bad from that angle. Now, if it's, you know, you drop a bomb somewhere and, you know, everybody in the locale, you know, all the families and kids and their dogs, you know, they all get killed, then there's a problem there. So you could say that's violence. But the point is the Vedic culture wouldn't allow that. You understand? So therefore, even something that we would count as violence isn't violence in the context. Does that make sense? The devotees are violent towards sinful activities, uncompromising in controlling their senses, untruthful if necessary for the protection of others, and impatient for the performance of Sri Krishna Sankirtan. Right? So we would consider these all bad qualities. That's why only a devotee can be a devotee. Right? Because the non-devotees, then they would never use any of these qualities anywhere. Therefore they sit around and, you know, with their, well, now it's a little different, but before it was always their beads and their beards and their flowing robes and everything so nice and talk so sweetly. And, yes. Yeah. Yeah, let's say like this. You're sitting at your house, okay? Or let's say you're visiting a house like that, you know, make it a little bit more distant. And, you know, you don't know. The person's your friend and all that. And, you know, they're there. They've just stepped out to the kitchen for something, gone to the bathroom. There's a knock on the door. You know, you open the door, right? And there's five guys there, you know, dressed in black with, you know, balaclavas on and machine guns. And they say, we want to talk to, you know, your friend. So you're going to say, oh, yeah, no, come sit down. He'll be out of the bathroom in a minute. Like that. Or you're going to just say, oh, sorry, he went to the store, you know. Right? So that's where, you know, truth has its weakness. Because truth means what is in line with what pleases Krishna. Right? So protection is a natural quality. So then, therefore, it's truthful in that situation to apparently tell a lie. You know? So this blatant truthfulness, and I was just being truthful, Prabhu, I'm sorry if it hurt your feelings, as if your feelings getting hurt is a, you know, your fault. This is all just nonsense by uncultured people. That's violence. But because they have fancy words, they'll say that, no, it's just truth. So in the name of truth, you can do anything. But truth doesn't mean Shastra. Truth means whatever they feel like to get done, whatever they want to get done. Does that make sense? So we have to understand this, even just in the modern intellectuals, when they say truth, it still means what they, means the journalist is so worried about truth. But is it actually he's worried about truth?
No.
No, he's worried about his job. You know what I'm saying? You know, if there's not going to be any benefit for him, why does he care? So he goes after, you know, a particular article, a particular thing, because then that's what's going to sell. You know, he's not bringing in, you know, the top, you know, editorialists as, you know, telling about how, you know, he found some kids on a corner somewhere and they were, you know, selling lemonade, you know, like that. And he felt that, you know, it should have been, you know, 10 cents, but they were charging 15. So this, you know, a gross, you know, over-exaggeration of, you know, inflated, you know, economic development here. And it's starting in our youth. And so what's going to happen when they become, you know, the CEOs of the, you know, nations, you know, biggest companies, you know, is anybody going to care? No. you know, Mrs. Smith's, you know, two, you know, son and daughter, you know, they were, you know, because who cares? Who's Mrs. Smith? You know? So it has to be somebody that that people know they consider as big, it would be something that they want to hear about. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? You know, the greenies are worried about dumping, you know, how you say, oil into the ocean, right? Because it kills a few birds, right? Maybe a lot of birds. But the point is, you know, that they dump all the waste, the water from the slaughterhouses, wherever land they dump that on, it will never grow anything. But do you hear any greenies writing big articles about that and standing out there and not letting, getting in the way of the trucks and getting run over? No, never. Because that's something distant enough. Because they want the birds there and that, because they like to go walk on the beach, right? While the guy that runs the oil company, you know, the oil's not going to go on the beach where he is, because his tankers go out in the big ocean, while his house is on the Mediterranean, right? So there's not going to be a problem. Does that make sense? So the problem is truth is defined by one's own subjective position. You know, it's either Krishna's, which is the objective, or it's subjective and it's your own. That's it. Doesn't matter how smart you are, how intelligent, what you've thought of, all the things, it's still subjective. Mundane is mundane. There's nicer mundane and not so nice mundane. So we can hand it to them. Yes, it's more intellectual, it's a little more refined, a little more sophisticated, a little bit broader, but still bottom line, Monday. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. So these things are there so we can tell the difference. Because if we can't, we will mistake mundanity for Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Exactly. The devotees are free from faults such as envy, false ego, pride, arrogance, and untruthfulness. They are submissive people and equipoised, right? So in other words, these main things, right? Violence, you know, he did, you know, control the senses, untruthfulness, protection, and impatience, or patience. So those are the five main fundamentals. So he took them and also showed them in the reverse. They're connected to Krishna, it's not a problem. Right? But certain things, envy, because then you can't function with others because of the amount of ignorance there. The false ego is also ignorance. Pride is ignorance. Arrogance is ignorance. So those things are a problem. They are submissive, peaceful, and equipoise. They do not see the three worlds as separate from Lord Vasudeva, who is the absolute, independent, blissful, and all-pervading supersoul of all living entities. Right? So absolute, independent, and blissful. Right? So he's absolute, means he is the supreme person. That is his position. Light, independent, means he can do whatever he likes, so his activities are always very unique. And blissful means, if he's always blissful, how will he be blissful unless his independent activities give a blissful result, right? So therefore his absoluteness means his independence is, his absoluteness is perfect, his independence is perfect, therefore it gives perfect blissfulness. Yeah, you could take that. I'm just showing it that way. Right, and then you have him as a person, and then, but you also have him as Brahman, and then at the same time as he's controlling the creation, right? You know, as the super soul, right? So you can see as all the elements of Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan are all included in these few statements like that. That's what the acharyas. That's why they sometimes you wonder why they use so many words, because they're getting everything. And they use certain words. So they'll vary them, you know, but they're using synonyms. You know, so that's why then it's comfortable. right? It's consistent. It always works the same thing. So you catch these things. We're just pointing them out so you start to see these things. But don't what comes naturally. You know what I'm saying? What comes naturally. Because otherwise, then there's the never force a definition, you know, into something else like that. What falls naturally. So that there falls like that. But then also if you add the all-pervading supersoul, so then we took it that one's one group, one's the other group. So you're talking about him and then the activities. But in that you can also see Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. But you could also take it and take it into the four, that he's given four, so therefore then the absolute, you have, what do you call it? The absolute, Shankarshan, independent, Prajumna, blissful, Aniruddha, and all-pervading supersoul is Vasudev. Do you know what I'm saying? So you could also, because that will fit, but you don't try to take... Does that make sense? You know, what has four fits into four, what has three fits into three, or you have to break it up, so, or we made it into two. Does that make sense? But don't try to unnecessarily get one into one. That's why there's a variety of ways to explain. So it's a matter of which ones will apply in the situation. Right? Otherwise, we start to speculate and make up our own. You know, it sounds great, it's unique, and it's interesting. But you know, it'll have a weakness somewhere. The devotees are fully absorbed in performing the nine types of devotional service. But Sri Hari Sankirtan is their life and principal activity. So all nine are there, but still, Shravanam Kirtanam is the prominent, is the main. Right? When devotees whose minds and intelligence are fully absorbed in the performance of Sri Hari Sankirtan are able to taste the happiness of relishing the sweet mellows of the Lord. So here. Then, you know, there he's saying, doing the nine processes, but showing that the Shravanam Kirtanam is the main, right? But here then, because we always hear that Shravanam Kirtanam and Vishnu Smaranam are the prominent, right? But there's the order, right? Unless you've heard, why would you do Kirtan? Right? And then from doing Kirtan, you'll remember. So now then he puts it together. The devotees whose minds, right, are fully absorbed in the performance, whose intelligence is... Right, so now then that means in their minds, that means remembrance is there. And then intelligence means their activities, their senses. Like, so how to perform the Sankirtan. It's not that they're just doing it out of sentiment, but how to do it nicely, how to expand it, how to see that it has effect. Right? And so they're able to taste the happiness of relishing the sweet mellows of the Lord. So you're tasting the happiness and relishing. Relishing then is something deeper, right? The different interactions, right? Because you have the rasa, right? So that's the mellows. The relishing that mellows, but that gives a taste that gives happiness. Does that make sense? So then the performance of activities of the Lord, the Lord's pastimes, right? Means the abhideya. That's there. So that gives taste, which is sambandha, and happiness, which is prayojan. Does that make sense? The devotees maintain their lives only to attain devotional service to Lord Keshava. They eat Lord Keshava's pure remnants, which are received without much endeavor. Right? If it's too much endeavor, then they don't get into it. Right? You know, in other words, if cauliflower is in season, then you buy that, cook that. If it's not in season, you know, you don't drive 3 hours across, you know, country to get some and then drive back, you know, or in your place maybe to the next country in 3 hours, right? You know, over a few countries maybe, right? Yeah.
It refers only to the food?
Only to the food. Pure remnants.
Now my question is, like in the West, the devotees sometimes endeavor very hard to maintain themselves with the same kind of thing.
Which are received without much endeavor. So it's like this. man A goes to the office, works for 8 hours, and gets, you know, 200 euros. Man B goes to the same office. He happens to be the boss of the office. And so he actually puts in about 3 hours of work, and he makes, you know, 10,000 euros. Right? So, but he only is sitting there at the work, because if he doesn't sit there, then no one else does the work. But otherwise, he has technically nothing to do. Right? So if he had a good supervisor that was trustworthy and could inspire, he'd probably hire him and then, you know, go to the golf club or something, you know. He could go, you know, how you say, network. Go meet other people who have found, you know, supervisors and hang out at the club and go do this and that and work out more business, right? So the point is one made 200 euros, one made, you know, 2,000 or 20,000. Some in that time make 2 million or 20 million. Same endeavor, right? So the point is it's not that by doing more endeavor you're going to get more, right? The man, he's working, instead of 8 hours a day, he's working 10 or 12. So he has more money. He has a bigger house. Yeah, maybe a bigger cow also. Like that. Not the cheapo cow, but the big old cow, right? You know, like that, you know? In fact, it was a Brazilian cow, right? You know, it means the Indian, it means Brazilian cows are all from India. But they bred them in such that they give two to 2.5 times the amount of milk that a good cow here gives, somehow or another. The same cow, they call them Brahman cows. But they're actually Indian breeds. You know, your traditional old, like the cows that we have here at our Goshala, they've taken those and then somehow or another, you know, I'm not sure if it's the curare or what they did something to make it work, right?
Shows many special breeds of Indian. They did some breeding, Meloy and Sindhu, and they give, and they are very nice. They can just go to the field and stay there forever and come back. And
they're nice guys. That's why they like them.
Indian cows are so big, they give much milk to cat eat so easily.
And they're very temperamental. Right. In other words, the cows that you come up to when you come close to them, they go like this. That means they're mixed with foreign breeds. They come up and they're nice and you can pet them. Though there's a local breed. Like that. So, back to, you know, the bigger cow or not so big cow. So he flew in cows from Brazil, or he had to use the local, you know, cows like that. You know, like that. So, the... But he's putting in all that and time and endeavor in there, so he's getting more, right? And then now, you know, he's gone, he's finally got that, he's gotten that position, he's gotten the raise, now everything's going good, he's worked out, you know, the college education, the fund for it, for his kids and all that, but, you know, somehow or another his wife doesn't pay any attention all the time, she's always at the spa, you know, the kids are never around, they're always out somewhere, and so, you know, when he comes home, generally he's alone, so therefore... Why do that? Spend more time at the office, and then, you know, another few years of that, and then, you know, a man dressed in a nice suit with a briefcase walks into his office and plunks an envelope down in his desk. When he opens it, it's the divorce papers, and, you know, and then another guy comes in, and then there's papers for his children's emancipation, and then it's kind of like, so what did he get? You understand? The point is you can work more, but it's not your quota. So you'll get here, you'll get a bigger house, but you won't the family that you want to run it with, right? It won't happen. Well, the guy who's satisfied with what he has, you know, the guy's there, lives in the East End like that. He has this little shoebox that he lives in like that. And, you know, they eat rocks for breakfast, isn't that what they do? She lives in a shoebox, eat rocks. And so, but he and his family are very happy. Because they put in time there. They put their effort there. So 8 hours is how much you have for occupation. The rest of it then is for your ashram. Does that make sense? It was your question, right? Okay, yeah. Make sure I'm not talking to the wrong person. Does that make sense? So you can get more on one side, but you lose on another. That's the point. So it's... what comes according to your nature, you know, easily, that's what you should do. And if you spend more time, you'll have more facility, but it doesn't mean the quality of life improved. You know what I'm saying? Just because you sign the divorce papers sitting on a private yacht doesn't mean the quality of your life is actually any better than the guy in the shoebox. Does that make sense? Right. So that's why it says that the Kesava is pure remnants which are received without much endeavor. So his pure remnants, so it means whatever comes with the minimal endeavor by Krishna's grace. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, he wants to get married, there's an arrangement available. Okay, it's not, you know, how you say, whatever he's thinking of is what it should be. It's not, you know, Zsa Zsa Gabor or, you know, Brigitte Bardot or something like this. But, you know, it works. You know, while I do have God brothers that since they were in their probably late teens or early 20s, and now they're in their late 50s, and they still haven't found Miss Perfect. Like that. I'm sure by the time they reach 70, maybe they will, because, you know, then they can't, you know, it's like that, you know, whatever it is. You know, nothing worries at all. So, you know, whoever's going to come, especially because, you know, some of them can have money, so then that, you know, the person will come along and feed him and, you know, turn the oxygen on, you know, like that. So get written into the will, and then when they croak, they get all the money, so then maybe it'll work out.
Perfect.
Yeah, you gotta say it works, yeah, like that.
But they're still looking.
Hmm? Yeah, they're still looking. Yeah, the problem is they're still looking, and it's what? You know, over 30 years later, they're still looking. So the point is, what comes without much endeavor, you want some, it comes easily. That's the thing. Kardama Muni, he wanted to get married. A qualified person came. So then he accepted. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that what comes without much, that means you're still using intelligence. The minds and intelligence are fully absorbed. So intelligence is there. So you have this qualification. What you're looking for basically is like this. So take it. If you wait for perfect, there is no perfect in the material world. Perfect's only when it's connected to Krishna. That's what makes something perfect. Does that make sense? Is that okay? You know, so you want the Louis Vuittons, but it's not available. The Gucci's there. Hey, it comes without much endeavor. Take it. Does that make sense? Yeah, like that. You know, it was Dior, it wasn't Louboutin, you know, like that. You know, whatever it is. You can still walk in it, right? It works. Like that. Okay. So I guess that makes. And there. And all you have to do is take some red paint, paint it on the bottom of the shoe, and who will know the difference, right? What is the nature of devotional service? The author replies. I think that one went over the heads. Okay. Let me take shelter of pure devotional service, which bestows the condensed nectar of spiritual bliss. Okay, what's the nature of devotional service? Okay. The saintly persons, devotees, being attached to devotional service, do not desire liberation. The eight mystic perfections, or the post of Indra or Brahma. Right? So, not the biggest pundit or the biggest controller, right? You know? By their service, these devotees bring the Supreme Lord Sri Hari under their control. Devotional service of Lord Krishna, which consists of nine processes, is always executed by the devotees. Like the Ganges, it takes away all one's sinful reactions. Like the desire tree, it awards one's desired goal. Right. So here, devotional service then does the element of retraction and does the element of attraction. So both things are gained from devotional service. Right, so like that, being engaged in these nine processes, then like the Ganga, right, you become purified, like that, and here's like a desire tree, you obtain all your goals, Right? So that's the... In this world, those who regularly cultivate the nine types of devotional service to Sri Krishna, as recommended by the great sages, happily attain the Lord's lotus feet, as recommended. So he doesn't just say the nine, but as recommended. It means, Shastras say it, the great sages then taking the Shastra, they practice it. What they recommend, what they practice, then that's what we try to follow. Because otherwise, if we create our own, you know, it may have its have some effect, but in the long run, it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? It's a problem. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you have just to give an example. We'll leave that. Okay. The nine types of devotional service are hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, worshipping, offering prayers, serving as a servant, becoming a friend, and fully surrendering everything to Him. So these are all your nice direct activities, right? But the point is as like the desire tree awards one's desired goal, because we see from before the definition of the devotees, they're always engaged in seeing everything as Krishna and for Krishna. Right? The situation is created by Krishna, the activities are for Krishna, and the potencies of it are Krishna, the results are Krishna. Right? So they're seeing like that. So even on the material platform, all their endeavors, because they see them always in connection with Krishna, it removes their sinful reactions and gives them the facilities that they're looking for. Does that make sense? So it takes care of both the spiritual and material. Devotional service is the only thing that can do that. Material life doesn't actually do that. You know what I'm saying? Because while you're doing your fruitive activity, you have to be renounced. You know what I'm saying? While you're doing your pious activity, you have to be renounced. You're not enjoying. Enjoyment's later. Right? So, technically it means you're inspired by what you're going to get, so you're not really looking at your situation. But if you actually look at your situation, then, you know, how you're not really enjoying. Right? And for the jnani, then also, he's enjoyments later, so he has to renounce even more. So he's even more suffering. Right? But he claims to be, you know, somehow another god, but whatever it is, you know. So, where is that happiness? Right? But for the devotee, the process of retraction is also service and seen in connection to the Lord. So he's also happy doing that. Right? Because he can accept that the obstacles come with the work. Right? So he doesn't have a problem. So he's happy and he's getting liberated. With removing that in the facilities, he's able to be comfortable, you know, in his service. Does that make sense? So it's the only thing that takes care of everything, right? There's plenty of facilities in the spiritual world, right? So what does that mean? It means the devotional process makes everything go nicely on all platforms, you know, best facilities, best relationships, best interactions, you know, best experiences. But you have to see it that way. As soon as you don't, then it's material, then you're getting the results and reactions that material gives. What was that?
Only devotional service is the source of happiness, but it is in the present.
It's the only sort of, yes, it's in the present. Because happiness is actually only in the present. Because you can say the karmis, they can say they're happy, but they're going to be happy.
Yes.
You know, or they're happy that they did the thing that will make them happy. But they're not actually, you know, enjoying it. You know what I'm saying? Because there's always going to be a weakness, right? The you want material facility, right? So there's that hankering. You know, so ultimately underlying. You know, there's envy, jealousy, greed, all these different things. But you're controlling them to do the thing. So when you get that result, you go to the heavenly planet. Then you're on the heavenly planet, so you have all that facility and all that. But someone else has more. You know? Or even it's not a matter of more, the demons, they want your facility. You know, so that's why they come up from the lower planets and they come in and they fight and they take over your place. And then you have to go hide in a lotus stem or, you know, do something, you know, some rock somewhere or something. You know, so where is it that enjoyment? When the Brahmananda gets to Brahman, he gets bored. So what do you, you know, where is this happiness? It's not existent. You're still the living entity, right? Right. So that means that the, you know, thinking, you know, feeling, willing is all there. It's just that you've decided that thinking nothing, doing nothing, you know, is perfection. So you do it for a while, and then after a while you go, okay.
You know,
been there, done that. Now what am I going to do?
Can he see any activity in the spiritual world?
Can he see activity in the spiritual world? Only if he's performed spiritual activity. Right? So the devotee who's performed spiritual activity, why would he go to the Brahman? Right? So the only one in that situation that could see both is the demon. Because he's seen the material world, that's why he's a demon. But he's also been killed by the Lord. Right? So he's seen the Lord. So he could either remember the material world, come back here, or remember the Lord and go there. But since he's liberated, he may be able to tell the difference. So there's chance he could progress to Vaikuntha. You know, he wouldn't go to Golok, he could go to Vaikuntha. Does that make sense? Golok, you have to go from here. Right. When this loving devotional service is performed without regard for the material bodily needs and external senses, it is called the most confidential transcendental devotional service. Its symptoms are as follows. Without regard, it doesn't mean that they're not taken care of, but there's not regard for it. Like you'll be doing that, well, I could stay up and, you know, chant more rounds, but, you know, then I'll be tired and then tomorrow this, or, you know, you'll have these considerations. But when it's just so natural, one doesn't worry about these things. But that means it's also, he says, when, it doesn't mean when that one time. It doesn't mean when one time this loving service, or when this loving devotion is one time, no. It means when it's consistent. So that means they won't be tired the next day because they'll be so inspired by other services. I mean, you think about it. You know, how much time does Krishna sleep in a day? And he's up dancing all night, so then they'll get a little short rest.
Like in the afternoon?
No, they'll get a little nap before getting up. Like that. Then he'll get up, go home, and maybe get in, you know, 20 minutes nap before Mother Jashoda wakes him up. Right after breakfast, he may get in seemingly a little nap, but then while that nap is going on, the gopis will come and they'll go off to a cave in the hill of Nandagaon. So not much happens there. And at noontime, then, you know, they may sit around and lay down and all that, the cowherd boys, but he'll get up and go with the gopis. And then at the end of that pastime, they get a little bit of a nap, but not much. So maybe that's where the concept of these power naps come in. You take your 20-minute rest, right, or half an hour, it's worth 2 hours of sleep or something like that. You know, so it comes from this. But you have to be inspired like that to be able to do it. So we see is the... Yes. Its symptoms are as follows. Perpetually ecstatic transcendental devotional service... That's really nicely. Perpetually, that's what I mean. Perpetually ecstatic, not just occasionally ecstatic, or sometimes, or once back in, you know, 83 was ecstatic, you know, is performed by an exalted devotee. The internal mood of such a devotee is indiscriminating, and as soon as he hears the Lord's transcendental qualities, his heart becomes spontaneously attracted to the Supersoul. Just like the water of the Ganges automatically and uninterruptedly flows to the ocean. Such a devotee is always sober, devoid of false ego, and equal to everyone. Sober doesn't mean, you know, like poker face or that. Sober means that they're always understanding the situation as it is. So if someone comes and pleasantly deals, then they can understand the situation as it is and they reciprocate pleasantly. Right? But if someone comes out and starts getting into nonsense, then they remain that you know, sober attitude that this is a useless endeavor. And so then you'll say, oh, you're so sober, you know. You know, come on, you know, can't get serious, get a life here, you know, like that. No, but it's they have a life. Devoid of false ego and equal to everyone. So equal means they will reciprocate with everyone according to how they deal with them. Right? You're nice, they'll be nice. You know, they're detached, you'll be detached. Because you're only interacting based on how they deal with you. You don't have something to gain from them. Right? He becomes merged in the ocean of bliss and even forgets his own body. Devotees situated in transcendental love of God do not care for the material world or the spiritual world or attachment or renunciation. So they're not trying to go to the spiritual world. They're just absorbed in Krishna. Right? Because why is this an important point? What happens if you care about the spiritual world? There'll be that fruitive element. So what does that actually mean, ultimately?
Sakam.
It's sakam. So that places it in which realm?
Material.
So that's how you get distracted here. You get attached, or what is it? What do you use? You care for the spiritual world. So you care about the detail and the situations of the spiritual world. It's nice. Right? So therefore, one gets the idea that material is eternal and full of bliss. Does that make sense? Because the nature of the soul is eternal, right? It has an eternal form. It's situated in the transcendental realm. So those qualities are there, but those only have meaning in relationship with Krishna. Right? Because even the spiritual world, transformation is going on for the Lord's pastimes. But it doesn't end. Here the transformation goes on and, you know, you get older and older and older till you disappear. You know, like that. But there the transformation goes on. And those don't happen. But the variety is created in the situations. Unlimited. So, therefore, things change. Right? So then there'll be a problem because you're attached to the situation. It'll change. Right? The Brajbasis are living in Gokul. Right? But when they see it's more favorable for Krishna and everybody else, then they move to Nandagam. They don't have a problem. Because they're not attached to the spiritual world. You know, so whatever situation is favorable to Krishna, that's what they're worried about. Does that make sense? So this is how, if one gets attached to that, that means you're getting attached to the situation. What about the situation you're servant of Krishna? And therefore the situation is for Krishna's satisfaction. But you're attached to the situation, why would you be attached to the situation? Right? Yes, but you'll get something from it. Through your endeavors you'll get something from it. Otherwise why would you be attached? Would you be attached to something that if you make an endeavor you'll get nothing from it? No. Right? So therefore the point is if you're attached, then that's where the material consciousness comes in. Right? Wasn't that the question yesterday? How they can be happening at one time? So that's why is that the Brahmins are attached to their situation. Therefore, you know, they're the Brahmanness, they have this offering, you know, they're attached to that. But they could have just given it to Krishna. They could have gotten something else, done their yajna later. Right? It's a spiritual world, it's always auspicious, there's always a muhurta, right? There's not a problem. Right? Does that make sense?
So the corrected that would be for Krishna's pleasure.
Yes. So that's why we're not attached to go back to the spiritual. We're attached to Krishna and his devotees. Right? Serving Krishna and the devotees. Someone like that, they go to the spiritual world. Right? Someone not like that, they stay here. Because if you went there, you'd be as good as here. You know, just nicer facility. It means the guy's living in a, you know, small, cheap, you know, how you say, what do you call it? There's a name for it, where the government provides.
Housing project?
Yeah, some housing project, right? So he's living there. Then he wins the lottery, and he gets 10 million euros, right? So he moves to some big fancy house and this and that. But has his consciousness changed? No. Just now he's same consciousness, better facility. So if we're attached to the material world, attached to the spiritual, means that attachment is for us, so we're going to do the same thing in the spiritual as we would in the material. Right? It's just it's far superior facility than even what you'd get in Brahmaloka. Right. Does that make sense? So that's why these points are brought out, that we'll take it that that's good. But at the same time, is that you could say in somebody who's very new, then that kind of concept would be okay. It's not a big problem. You know? But the point is at some point they should be able to discriminate. Otherwise, then one gets attached to the things. Yeah.
If we're attached to the spiritual world, might we act in such a way as to go to the heavenly planets?
You might. It depends upon how much. How that attachment would manifest.
Yeah.
See, because attachment to it means the situations. But the point is the devotees are attached to the Lord's pastimes, the interactions, right? Mm-hmm. The situations are only described to enhance the situation. I mean, enhance the pastime. You know what I'm saying? We're saying, you know, the full moon is there, and you know the light is, you know, the silver light is dispersed, and you know the weather is just right, and you know all the cuckoos are there, and this and that. Then it sets the scene for the rasa dance. It's the rasa dance that's important. But we get attached to, wow, I want to be in that kind of situation. And the mood's so nice all the time and all this and that. And you know, the best spiritual world would be a full moon night every night. You know, like that. You know, so then it's a problem. You won't be actually happy being in the spiritual world. Because if you're attached to the spiritual world as a facility, you'll be dissatisfied because it'll keep changing according to Krishna's desire. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. You know, if one's looking at it, no, but it's connected to Krishna, then from that aspect it's fine. You know, from the very simple, just attached to the spiritual world means being with Krishna and being in the pastimes. They don't distinguish. So therefore, that's fine.
So half full, half empty cup.
Yeah. So, but the point is that still it has to be only Krishna. You know, so that it starts like that, but then it has to deepen. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, so it works, but one has to know the distinction. You know, it's like how you say the 3-year-old girl, you know, she goes into the closet and drags out a whole bunch of stuff of her mother's and this and that and finds some this and that. So she sets up and gets out her dolls and, you know, there's a wedding and there's all kinds of things like that. And, you know, so she's attached to the idea, you know, like that. And so it's fine. But to her, it's only, you know, dressing up like this and doing this. It's all externals. Right? So now, that's okay, because that's, you know, the direction. But now when she's, you know, fully grown and now she's actually going to get married, and if all she's thinking about is the dress and the this and the that and not about the people, it's always going to turn into a problem. You understand? The people have to be more important. But this is the nice environment in which that can be expressed. So one may in the beginning have that element of attachment to the spiritual world. But, and so that's fine, because that's the situation in which one serves Krishna. But ultimately it has to be, you're attached totally to Krishna and the devotees and serving with those devotees to please Krishna. And it's not the situation you're in. It's not that, oh yes, I'll be attached like this if I'm in the spiritual world. No, the devotees are attached like that when they come here, and the pastimes are here, or when they come in the Sankirtan pastimes. They're still just as attached and still just as absorbed. That make sense? Do Devotees situated in transcendental love of God do not care for the material world or the spiritual world or attachment or renunciation. They do not concern themselves with inactivity, nor prescribed duties, nor rules and regulations, nor the mentality of I and mine. Right? They're not concerned themselves with inactivity. They're not trying to do nothing because, you know, doing these other things would be material. Because they don't see anything as material. So they're not worried about not being active. Nor are they worried about prescribed duties that by doing this then I'll be successful. No, it's just this is what facilities are there to serve Krishna. That's what you use. Right? You have to situate yourself. Right? Nor rules and regulations. It's not that the rules and regulations is why you're doing it. You're doing it because those rules and regulations come from Krishna. That's how he likes it. So you're doing it to please him. It's not the rule. You know, it's not the piety. Nor the mentality of I and mine. So I'm not the doer. The results, therefore, are not mine. I'm the servant. The results are for Krishna. Rather, they are always absorbed in thoughts of the blissful Lord, Sri Hari. By the mercy of the saintly devotees, let this confidential devotional service, which bestows great transcendental happiness, destroys all miseries, and is executed by the exalted devotees, be constantly present within my heart as my dearmost object. Yeah, so we see it does all things. It situates itself. It comes by the mercy of the devotees. Right? It's the most confidential because it means the interaction between the devotees and the Lord. Right? Bestows transcendental happiness, destroys all miseries. So when it comes to that topmost platform, at the same time it removes everything to do with the mundane. So it does both aspects. And is executed by the great devotees because we follow in their footsteps. So will that be constantly present, not just occasionally or only on Sunday or... You know, the rest of the week I'm pretty busy, so I wouldn't want to be overwhelmed by transcendental ecstasy here. So, you know, let's be practical. You know, Sundays I have a time, right? You know, after I finish the funnies, then, you know, let's get into it, right? Okay. 3. The author's prayer for the shelter to the process of devotional service. The author now prays for the 9 activities of devotional service. O my ears, please always hear the qualities and pastimes of Sri Hari. O my tongue, please always chant his holy names and glories. O my mind, please always remember his deity form. O my bodily limbs, please always serve his lotus feet. O my hands, please worship and serve him as a menial servant. O my head, please offer obeisances to him. O myself, please make friendship with him. O my body, please always be subordinate to him. I have not performed religious duties, pious deeds, or austerities. I have no purity, renunciation, good fortune, or knowledge. By the mercy of the devotees, however, I will drink the nectar of the glories of Sri Hari through my ears and cross beyond the darkness of ignorance. So it hasn't performed religious duty, because real religious duty means this connection. Eternal religion means in connection with the Lord. Pious means that it's being done and it gives a good result for Krishna. Right? Austerity means that it's not for oneself, it's for Krishna. So even when it's done religious duties, pious deeds and austerities within the material sphere, they're still mundane. So technically you haven't actually done any. Right? I have no purity, renunciation, good fortune, or knowledge. No purity because there's always a motive. Right? Karma, jnana. Renunciation means I want that. Renunciation means the results given up at the end. No, I'll renounce in Sambandha and Abhideya, but not in Prayojana. You understand? So the actual renunciation, Krishna points out in Gita, is in Prayojana. But we'll take it, oh, the person has so much facility, he's such a materialist. No. What's the result of his facility? Who's it for? If it's for Krishna, he's renounced. Right? If it's for himself, then he's not renounced. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the point is we'll move that renunciation and these piety all to what we're going to get out of it. Right? like that. Good fortune means we get results, but if it doesn't use for Krishna, it's temporary. So what you'll get from mundane, one only gets misery. The man thinks, if I only had money, then I'd be happy. And then when he has money, everybody wants it. He doesn't know if his relatives like him for himself or his money, his children like him, even his wife. He doesn't know. Like that. He has so much money. Right? If they were together when he had nothing and now he has something, then you know, okay. But the point is now he's going to have, suddenly now the relatives he's never seen before come around, you know, all the things, his kid, everybody. So then you don't know. You know, so does he actually have good fortune? Right? Income tax wants to take it. Thieves want to take it. You know, somebody's coming along with some great thing you should invest in because then he'll make so much money, like this. Or knowledge. If you don't know Krishna, you don't actually know anything. Right? You know, so that's the... And it's just like this. Let us say I'm a great scientist, right? And I walk into the dining room, and on the table there's a bowl, and in the bowl there's a preparation, right? So now, with my great intelligence, I analyze this preparation, and I look at it and see, it appears to be potatoes, right? So I take some of the potato, put it on, you know, some way do some... I do some test, I see there's starch there, but so many things could have starch. So then I do some different things and I get it down to the molecular level, then I can understand that this combination, it has to be a potato. You know, not only that, it's a potato from this particular area of the country, so that meant it had to have been transported this much, so at least and in this season, then that means that was from the last season, so it has to be at least this much time old, like that, and so like that. Then I take the next thing, you know, there's this funny little green leaf, so what's that? Okay, and then I analyze and I find out it's a coriander leaf. Okay, so then all these different things I can find out from there. And I can go on and on and on like this, analyzing everything. Like that, and then I can even conjecture on how it got into this state, like this, you know, that by the process of, you know, a combination of you know heat, oil, and water, you know, brought the potatoes to this state. But then the same amount of state is not there with the coriander leaf, so they must have been put near the end, you know, like that. And, you know, so many different things are there, but then the salt, because of its effect on slowing down the cooking process for the vegetables, then the salt had to go in later than the potatoes went in. And, you know, all these different things you work out, and so you've come up with this whole thing, yes? You might even work out, you know, a recipe, or, you know, it's like this. So now can I say I'm intelligent? All right? On one level, yes, I could probably get possibly a seat at a university with this knowledge. You know? Like that. But can I, by looking at those potatoes, tell why they were cooked and what ultimately those potatoes are for? That I have no idea. So if I don't know that, can I actually say I'm intelligent? No. That's modern science. Are they really intelligent? You know, they figured out that, you know, the earth is like this and this is on there and then, you know, the Ganga around here and then this and that and this silt here. And they can do all that. But why does the Ganga move? Why do rivers snake? You know what I'm saying? Lava seems to just flow straight down the side of the hill right into your living room. Right? But you know, the water goes down and goes like this and that. You know, so why is that? Right? See, if it had snaked down, you know, what is it? What's that? Not this side. Vesuvius. You know, in Pompeii they might have made it out or something. But, you know, it came straight down right into the living room. So, you know, hey, like that. You know. So who made it like that? Why? What is its ultimate purpose? That they can't tell. And so then they'll, because they can't understand, they'll say, oh, that's just faith, oh, that's this, that's that. That's not real science. But is it real science that you figured out the prep on the table but wouldn't know why it's there or what it's for? Would we call it science? No. So why, if you extend it a little bit bigger, it wouldn't be the same, you know, like that. So that's why then he says, no, or knowledge. No knowledge. Doesn't matter how much you have on the material platform, you still actually have no knowledge. Does that make sense? Yeah. Alas, when will I loudly and affectionately chant the holy names of Sri Hari and sing his glories? He is always praised by the saintly devotees. When will my chest become drenched by the tears from my eyes? When will my body become decorated with the symptoms of incomparable ecstatic love, such as my hair standing on end? When will my heart become melted? And when will I roll on the ground, being intoxicated by love of God? If Sri Hari constantly remains present within my heart, then I do not mind taking birth in hell as a result of my previous sinful activities. Right? So here he's describing remembrance of the Lord and that interaction on that level. It's not the situation. Right? So therefore, it doesn't matter heaven, hell, spiritual world, it doesn't matter where you appear. As long as you're in this condition, what does it matter? Right? Right? Because devotional service, being independent, it's not dependent upon the situation. It's independent. Right? We have this idea that the situation creates the happiness. But many times we'll be in a situation and we're not happy. We said, oh, I've always wanted this, and then after so many years of your life, you get that situation and you're not happy. Why? Because the situation doesn't generate it. Right? It's your mood and attitude in it and your interaction with people that generate it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, if one's absorbed in Krishna, then one will be happy anywhere. But if one's not absorbed in Krishna, it doesn't matter where you are, you know, then it's the, you know, the habu-dubu program. You know, you get a moment to come up for a breath, and that breath is called ecstasy, and then the rest of the time it's back underwater. Situation generates happiness because your result is based on how you know the activity that you perform, which is based on the situation. But it's not the situation that generates it. It's your consciousness, you know, in interacting with the situation. You know what I'm saying? So if you're happy with it, you'll be happy. You're not happy with it, you won't be happy with it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, the one lady, you know, there's a special function coming up, you know, at a friend's house, so she looks in her closet and, you know, there's five dresses there and she picks her favorite and puts that on and goes. Right? The other lady, you know, comes to her, you know, walk-in wardrobe like that, opens all the cabinets, and then in frustration goes, I have nothing to wear. You understand? So it's how you perceive it as opposed to what it actually is. You know what I'm saying? So if you perceive it in connection with Krishna, it's always nice. But if you don't perceive it in connection with Krishna, even the nicest situation technically is not nice. Right? Means, let's say the situation comes, let's say everybody says this situation will be nice, okay? We'll be at a very exclusive, what do you call it? You know where you say place? You know, you're having a function, the place is very exclusive. There's a name for the place.
Venue,
yeah. Very exclusive venue. You know, the most expensive of eating and drinking. You know, the most, top of what you would say, the cream of society, you know, like that, you know, but, you know, if it's made out of, you know, bull dung, you know, it's that there's not a whole lot of, you know, you get a whole lot of essence out of that, but whatever. So the, you know, the cream of society is there, everyone's best dressed in the best, you know, everyone's got some unique, you know, one-off, handmade thing by some, you know, personality. Does that make sense? You have the top entertainers, you have, you know, the best, you know, speakers and whatever it is, Nobel laureates or other, you know, people who are the top in their fields. So it can't get better than that. Right? So most people say if they were arranging something, that would be perfect. You know, not only that, the venue of that, that's in a perfect place, you know, that the actual in some particular locale, you know, say French Riviera, you know, someplace very nice. And so then it's you know, it's, you can't get better than that. Okay? Now, the people that are there at that, are they actually enjoying themselves? They may or may not. But you have to pretend you are, because this is the topmost. You're supposed to be happy at this. You know, but one guy just got a call, you know, from his business partner that, you know, he's just, took over the business and, you know, he gets nothing. You know, another guy, his wife just informed him that she's leaving with the plumber. You know, another guy just found out the stock market crashed. Another guy just found out, you know, that, hey, they just got their Grammy and they're the best and this and that and walking around the room. But the competition won 5 Grammys out of their record instead of only 1. And they're here also and everybody's over talking to them. They got 5 Grammys, you only got 1. You know, so like this and that. And then that outfit you got, it's too similar to that person over there and you really don't like that person. So now it annoys you that, you know, whenever you look at what you're doing, it reminds you of them. You know, does that make sense? Should we keep going around the room? We got the idea. So, therefore, it never is perfect. But we have this idea it should be. Because if you have good facility, it should be that if you have the right mentality and right understanding, right endeavor, you should be able to get nice results. But the point is that anything mundane is always going to be faulty. And anything actually Krishna conscious is always going to be perfect. So it's actually the mentality. The situation is only to enhance the activity. Right? The results for someone else. And the situation is only to perform. The results for someone else, so the situation is what will generate it. That's generated from the situation. So the situation is supporting the result, I mean the endeavor. And the endeavor is for the result. So the focus is on the endeavor. So that's the Vedic thing. It's always on the endeavor. Material is always on the result. Does that make sense? Yes.
You repeated that we were originally distracted by superior facility. Now we're given the opportunity of an inferior facility. So we catch the point of endeavor.
Yes, you could say that. You'd also look at it as that the superior facility is conscious and is conscious that you're not conscious of Krishna. And so that's annoying to the superior facility. While the inferior facility, being not conscious, doesn't care. Yes, so that also will be there. But because the soul is pure, you know, how would they be attracted by inferior facility? You understand? So when we talk about material and spiritual, we mean its connection to the Lord. So you can see facility not in connection with the Lord, and that looks like it has a sparkle to it, some attraction. That will be nice. But other living entities are looking at the same situation and seeing its connection to Krishna. It's saying, oh, that will be nice. So therefore, some get the association of the eternal associates and therefore develop love for Krishna and stay in that environment. And others then take birth as Lord Brahma. And then from there you get a, you know, full view of material facilities. Right? Brahma sees every last facility that there is. Right? So like that. Then it comes. But so it's the consciousness. That's why we're always focusing on the consciousness. So, but we'll look at it. No, it's the material facility. So by giving up the material facility, that makes it spiritual. No, it's that you're giving up to please Krishna. That's what makes it spiritual. But if you used it also for Krishna, it would be just as spiritual. Right? So depending upon what would be favorable for your situation, that's what you choose, using it or not using it. If by not using it, that would be service to Krishna, then you'd do it. If by using it would be service. So you have to see what it is. Does that make sense? That's okay. Yes.
In order to know what we want, we need to be aware.
Yeah, to know what we want, you have to be aware. Most people don't know what they want. You know, if you tell them, write down, you know, what it is you want, then they might not be sure. And most can't tell the difference between desire and need either. Right? Like that. You know, so it's that's the point of discrimination. We can tell the fine points of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, and within those all the breakdowns and everything. So that makes it then we're aware we can actually distinguish devotional service and material. Does that make sense? I do not mind taking if Sri Hari constantly remains present within my heart, then I do not mind taking birth in hell as a result of my previous sinful activities. On the other hand, if Sri Hari is not present within my heart, then I will not get any happiness by owning heaven or earth. Rather, they will simply cause pain to my mind. Right? Because if there's someone you're attached to, let's say you're in the house, it's really nice facilities, all the family is there, it's a great time, so it's nice. Let's say the whole family goes somewhere else. They're not coming back today, they're coming back after 3 weeks, but you're there alone. Is all that facility nice? No. It feels very empty. But you have everything. So that's the point, is that even if I have all facilities, if Krishna's not involved, then it will simply give pain. So in the neutral state, it doesn't give pain. You don't notice, because it's so therefore that looks attractive. So we get involved, so we don't know what we're getting into. But now that one has learned, therefore when one comes to the neutral state, one will not fall to the material platform again, because one won't be interested. So one will just progress towards Krishna. Does that make sense? The author confirms his previous statements. Oh, my mind, how long will you enjoy the happiness of material dualities, which are like poison, right? So first he's saying the nectar, and that. So when will he become absorbed in that mood? And now he's taking it in reverse, right? Which are like poison. How long will you remain in the distasteful association of contamination? Please search again and again for the lotus feet of Sri Hari, which are the abode of nectarian bliss. I worship the lotus feet of the son of Nanda, who is the personification of bliss, whose bodily hue is like the new cloud, and who cannot be known even by the best of the demigods. The great devotees, yearning to understand him, meditate on him as the immeasurable supersoul of all animate and inanimate entities, the spiritual master of everyone, the blissful supreme Brahman, and the absolute truth. All right, so from any angle the Shastra gives, then the devotee is able to see the Lord. Right? Because he said the, you know, supreme blissful Brahman. Right? So it's just, you know, it means the qualities, Krishna's qualities as Brahman. So that's supremely blissful. O friend of the poor, O master of the fallen souls, I do not pray for an empire, for the position of Indra or Brahma, for knowledge, for mystic perfections, or for a place in the Brahman effulgence. Rather, I fall at your lotus feet and eagerly pray that you please give me your unshakable, pure devotional service. O worshipable Lord of the devotees, O spiritual master of the entire universe, O Sri Hari, I am attached to my family life. I am always engaged in maintaining my family members. I am attached to material enjoyments. I am decorated with six principles such as lust and anger. I am devoid of piety. And I am engaged in the service of sinful people. Still, O my Lord, knowing that your causeless mercy is my only hope, I shamelessly pray for devotional service. Right? This is the point, is that despite all this, devotional service is still independent. It's still your desire for it is the reason you'll get it. Right? Otherwise, why is it you have extremely pious people, but there's no generation of devotional service? Because they don't have an interest. So the piety isn't what generates it. Generally, a pious person will be more inclined because they have that time where they could sit down and think. Right? Means everybody else has to be very busy. But they have time. So then they'll contemplate and then try to see. They have facility, and so they get jaded, so they see what's wrong with this. Before I thought just by having it, it'd be fabulous. Now I have it, one becomes jaded, and it's kind of like, what's the meaning? You know, especially as, you know, you bought everything. You know, you have a jumbo jet as your personal airplane. What do you get next?
Rocket.
Huh? Rocket. Okay, you could go for the rocket. Yeah, okay. And then after you have the rocket?
I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm saying there's an end of the line. You know what I'm saying? You know, you bought, there's only so many top cars. Once you have them all, now what do you buy? You know? You know, there's only so many places on the planet to buy a house. You know what I'm saying? So, huh? You know, so you have them. You know what I'm saying? So at what point do you start to see as something's not working here? Like that. So devotional service can be prayed for. That's why I say shamelessly, because technically we're not pious to deserve such a nice thing. But devotional service is beyond that. So Krishna is beyond piety. Otherwise we're saying is because I'm pious, that's why I deserve to have your mercy. No, Krishna is beyond that. There's nothing one can do to deserve, on the material platform, to deserve Krishna. It's only that love for Krishna, or that desire for love for Krishna, that attracts Krishna. The author now describes how one's house and family can become favorable for devotional service. Yes? Yeah, no, but how did that come about? You know, think about it. It means the situation has improved, but what's the cause for the situation to improve? His mercy, and why did that mercy come in that way? Yes, the point is because we've done the devotional service, therefore it's come. So then the point is only devotional service is actually going to be the proper answer. Does that make sense? So it still remains in the same. So it's not a problem. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. So now he'll describe how to make one's house and family become favorable for devotional service. O Madhusudan, even though we are householders, our wives, children, servants, relatives, well-wishers, and wealth are always engaged in devotional service, and we offer everything to your lotus feet, we are able to conquer you by our service. O Krishna, if we engage our eyes in seeing your beautiful deity form, our ears in hearing your holy names and glories, our noses in smelling the flowers that have been offered to you, our bodies in embracing devotees, and our tongues in relishing food that has been offered to you, then you are always conquered by us, even though we are engaged in pleasing our senses. Right? So that's taking the, you know, all the directly you can, because you have all those facilities. You know, the household life will afford all these facilities. So then you can engage. So here we can engage. So on any platform that you can do, but ultimately we see is that platform of Bhagavan. That's what we're looking for. But even if we start with Paramatma and Brahman, it doesn't matter. If we sing it, then it's engaged. Then it becomes useful. O Lord, if we engage our lust in serving you, our anger against those who blaspheme you, our greed in honoring your remnants, our illusion in trying to achieve your lordship, so our greed in honoring your remnants, so that means the brahmacharis going and, you know, working out devious ways to steal the mahaprasad, still they get, benefited like that, you know. You know, the temple president may not appreciate, but in reality, they got benefited. Yes. Their main misfortune came because they were caught. That's the real problem. Right? Our illusion in trying to achieve your lordships, our ego in being your devotees, and our pride in drinking the honey of your lotus feet, then we can easily defeat these six enemies of lust, anger, greed, illusion, false ego, and pride, which are always surrounding us. O Lord, you punish the demons who meditate with enmity upon you by only giving them liberation instead of giving them nectar of your lotus feet. O Lord, may I obtain your friendship birth after birth. Your friendship is the source of relishing the nectar of your lotus feet. Do you have in here somewhere where you tell about the demons? At the end. But it's here somewhere?
No, I think this is the end of this chapter.
Oh, okay. Okay. So these qualities are there, but they're engaged in the Lord's service, then there's no problem. Right? So you found a way to engage it. Then it becomes purified. Right? And then you try not to use them not in connection to the Lord. Right? Then everything starts to work very nicely. Right? That makes sense? Questions? No?
So now, it's like to yes. Before it was to direct connection, you can say.
Direct, but here you're seeing is you somehow know still those who blaspheme Krishna. That's where you use your anger. You know, so still you're bringing it in like that. But whatever is direct or indirect, greed in honoring your remnants. So. Getting your hands on the maximum amount of remnants, so it's not a matter of, you know, you have, you know, the biggest closet full of the most remnants, so that, you know, you have, you know, like that, you know. I'm saying somebody has one thing, you know, they got an ankle bell for Radharani, that you have 20 ankle bells and 5 dresses and, you know, like this. So, you know, so that greed is being used to...
I was just noticing that in the last paragraph it was like more pure love of Krishna. Now it is some fight against the enemy.
No, but it's showing how, the point was that this was how one's house and family can become favorable. So he's shown that everything, all that's used for the Lord's service. So that's all the facilities is used in the Lord's service. Then he shows how the senses can be used in the Lord's service. Now he's showing how even these qualities that take us away from devotional service can be connected to devotional service, right? You know, so we want to serve. So we're, you know, just like we want so much remnants, that we're always looking for more and more service. So that lust to get more and more like that. So that's where it's being engaged. Does that make sense? So these things are illusion in trying to achieve your lordship. So the illusion is we see something not in connection to Krishna, so then we find Krishna in that and then connect it, you know, see it in connection to the Lord. So the illusion has been engaged. You know what I'm saying? You know, I think my car is very prestigious and therefore I'm very special and, you know, people look at me when I drive down the street and all that. But now that illusion, now you use that to serve Krishna. You know, you drive the devotees around or... the deities ride in your car and stuff like that, or, you know, stuff like that. So it's, you're able to engage these elements. Right? So ego is identify, I'm your devotee. It doesn't mean it's false ego, now it's real ego. Right? Pride in drinking the honey of the lotus feet, is that pride, is that one's happy to be engaged in such an activity. Right? Because pride can also have that, you know, a pious aspect to it. We're proud to be a part of this great endeavor, you know, so, you know, like this. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yes.
Next point is the Lord actually punished the demons.
Yes, he punished by liberation, giving them liberation. That's why devotees aren't very interested in it.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes how Sayujya Devi went to commit suicide at the Nidaya merciless place.
What's the connection?
That Lord Turanga is so much merciful because he doesn't punish anybody in this way.
What's that got to do with Nidaya?
That he is not merciful to the Sayujya Devi.
He's not merciful to her. What would be merciful?
Engagement in his service.
So she can't engage in his service? She can engage. It's all the ones who think that that kind of liberation is important. Yes, no?
Her function is to be the impersonal liberation.
Well, it's just like Maya Devi. Maya Devi, she takes care of the living entities in the material world, but she's rendering service to Krishna. Right? Now, would you want all those Brahmavadis and yogis and all those people, you know, entering into the spiritual world? No, but they get stuck in the Brahman, and so therefore then, you know, they're neutralized, right? You know, so they get stuck there. You know, and if they do get past that, then at Goloka there's tridents, and they'll take care of them. You know, so it's like, you know, you wouldn't want them around. So she is doing service.
Whereas one may have many obstacles and rationalize that this is a sign of Krishna's mercy, can you also desire some regulator, some smoothness?
The point is, what's the smoothness for? How will that be more beneficial for Krishna? Because right now you are praying to Krishna. When it's going smoothly, are you praying to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? It's like this. It's when you're sitting there, you know, at the spot and nobody wants your books, well, what do? You start praying to Krishna. Now what happens if everybody's taking books and all that? You might forget Krishna. When you go back to the temple, you're telling everybody, wow, how great it was, and I did this many books and this and that. Did you mention Krishna? Maybe you say, well, Krishna was so kind, and then go on and on like this. The other one is everything, it's all about Krishna. You understand? So what will you do with the smoothness? So that's the point. When things are smooth, you will always remember, then smoothness can be there. And if not, then you'll give an example to others on how to get through a rough patch. You know, so you can set perfect example how to get through a rough patch, or if you have facility, then how to use it. But generally, it's rough patches are there because when things are nice, we forget Krishna. We only remember when things aren't so nice. So that's, you know, so if you want to know if it's possible to have a smooth patch, you only have to talk to yourself about it. You have to go to the boss, who is the one performing the activities that create the rough patches, right? You know, like that. Does that make sense? So that's why here they don't pray for it be smooth. They simply pray to be always absorbed in the Lord, because then if it's smooth or not, it's not a problem. The problem is we're suffering. We're suffering because we're not God conscious. If we're God conscious, we're not suffering, so it doesn't matter the situation. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because there's only an idea that someone in a different situation is not suffering. You know? Like that, house has been so busy and crazy and all, they think, wow, when will just, you know, everybody be gone and just calm down and be peaceful and everything. Like that, you know. So you're looking at that, and your neighbor's sitting and going, nobody ever comes by, nobody cares, I'm here all alone. It would be so nice if somebody would come by. You know? And so when everybody comes by, you go nuts, and when everyone goes away, you go nuts. So it's like, it's just the way it is. And they're saying, so the idea that another situation is better, we've only heard about it. It hasn't happened. You know what I'm saying? Or there's a moment. That's what we say. He had a moment. There was a moment. You know? They don't say, wow, you know, I had some years. You know, or, you know, like that, or I had some months, or I had some weeks, or days, or hours, or minutes, or seconds. No, it's just moments, because it's just a moment that is wow, and that's it. And so that is so great, then you go on talking about that. You know, I mean, they're still talking about it, right? You say it's just, you know, every year when it's D-Day, right, you know, then they get all the old geezers together and they all sit around, and now they're all in wheelchairs and stuff, and they all make sort of, yeah, you know, we'll hit the beach, you know, like this, you know, all this kind of stuff. There was a moment. And so they're still talking about it. You know. And, you know, generally who's listening are people who didn't have moments, right? You know, so at least they had a moment, right? You know, so. Yes. Yeah. No. Only if some guys get together, you know, what's it? Get together and they start talking sports and get into it, then you might bring it up and get a little more juice out of it, but that's it, you know. Yeah, no, you don't get up each morning and go, yeah, we won the final. Honey, that was 37 years ago. Yeah, but we won, you know. Honey, move on. No, but. Did you win the grand final? Says, I was the cheerleader. You were after me.
Like sometimes it is also the same story with the old Sankirtan devotee.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So you can tell like that. But the thing is, in Krishna consciousness, then those moments are eternal, because that, you know, that's the thing. That's why they're so special. But that's the principles. You're taking that, the remembrance of old times, but connecting it to devotional service, so then it becomes connected to Krishna. You know, because everybody has those far out stories, especially old Sankirtan stories. We've got some really good ones. I'm sure there's new Sankirtan stories, but you know, there's more old Sankirtan stories because more people went out on Sankirtan. Nowadays, it's more of a rarity, so there's less stories. Yeah, and there's no New Age stories, is there, you know? You don't sit around and tell old New Age stories, you know? I was sitting, it was so blissful. The light, you know, the incense was wafting. The A-wave music, you know, no incense around there. Oh well, what to do?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.